Hello all and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And joining us today is the guy who composed the music for the podcast and my brother, Stefan Krieger. Welcome, Steph.
Guten Tag.
This is like the third or fourth time we're trying this. many tech issues today. Let's see how we get on. Steph
third
is joining myself. Third time lucky and final time lucky. I really hope so. Steph's joining myself and Luke today to discuss the movie that everyone else is talking about, Ryan Coogler's latest film in his Michael B. Jordan collaboration, Sinners. From Ryan Coogler, director of Black Panther and Creed, and starring Michael B. Jordan, comes a new vision of fear. Sinners. Trying to leave their troubled lives behind, twin brothers, Jordan, return to their hometown to start again, only to discover that an even greater evil is waiting to welcome them back.
Ooh. Ooh. Well, Chris, you add a level of drama to that synopsis that I could only dream of.
I just need a good Goranson score to back me up there. Well, all right. So we already went to you, Luke, but your audio is now long lost. I will. Let's start with you, Steph. So you, because you really wanted to be on this call today to talk about the film. So what were your thoughts on Sinners?
I did. I watched this a few weeks ago and I fell in love with it. I think it's brilliant. I really do. I think it's so unique. I think it has such a unique vision, and it's probably one of the best things I've seen this year in terms of a film that collaborates with music as well. I think they go hand in hand so well. It may even be the point where the music is better than the film. Yeah, and I just think that it's one of those films where I watched it and I could not forget it, and it didn't leave my head, and the music was still in my head, and there's lines and there's scenes and there's everything, and to the point where I don't do this often either. I went back again to watch it again, and yeah, that is in my books. If I'm loving something that much, to go back and watch it again, and it's not because of one of those things where it's like an Inception type thing where you need to go back and understand more. To pick up on things that you missed the first time around, it was just because of my initial enjoyment, which is very rare.
Did you watch this in IMAX?
I did not. I watched it at a View Cinema. Oops, okay. Sorry, Phoenix.
next time. These are brands that should not ever be uttered on this podcast.
I ask because, you know, I agree with you, the music is next level. And all I could think when I was watching this was, I wish I was watching this in IMAX. I wish this music was even louder. And the problem I had is that in the cinema I was in, which was also a View Cinema, the speakers were so crap, and every time there was like some significant bass, there'd be like this really tinny sound coming out, and
Oh no.
I just spent the whole movie like, oh, this could sound so much better than it does.
That is such a shame.
But despite that, like, I could still appreciate how awesome the music was.
Honestly, Steph, I have felt this burning desire also to re-watch the movie. I have been looking for every opportunity to go back to the cinema to watch this film. But before we get to that as well, Luke, what are your thoughts?
Yep. Well, okay. I'm trying to remember word for word what I said in our face. So I saw this film quite late. I only saw this a few days ago, and the film's been out for almost a month, I guess, a fair while. And I've just heard so much hype around the film, so much hype. And you know what can happen sometimes when there's this level of excitement around a film? You know, you go in with like really high expectations, and more often than not, you're left a bit deflated after watching it.
Yep.
But, you know, I can happily say with this film, despite the mega hype, my expectations were still surpassed. And this is, I agree with Stefan, this is one of the best films that has come out this year, if not the best. I love how the film was structured. You know, there's this very distinct first kind of act of the film where we're setting up characters, we're setting up locations, was setting up the period, and that becomes really important later on in the film. Really helps to give a lot more weight, you know, when shit really starts to go down, and things really start to hot up, and it's just mesmerizing, the combination of the music and the visuals. I mean, Göransson was already one of the top composers, you know, that's working today. I mean, he's had a few hit and misses for me. I wasn't really a massive fan of the Tenet score, but I love the Black Panther score. I love the work he did on The Mandalorian as well. But for me, the soundtrack, or I should say the original score for this film, it's really cementing him as one of the best that's out there today. Also, I've mentioned in previous podcasts as well how much I love the vampire genre and just the horror genre, you know, in total. I think in a past podcast episode as well, I actually paired with Fright Night, which is one of my favorite vampire films.
Which I'm still yet to see as well.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I love the vampire genre, and I especially love what this film does with it. It's just, again, like you said, Stefan, it's so unique. It's something we haven't seen before. Just exhilarating. And I haven't felt this much excitement sat in the cinema for a very long time.
Wow. Well, high praise indeed.
Although I will say that I treated myself to a Tango Ice Blast before this film, and it gave me a massive fucking headache for the whole film. Too much sugar.
Yeah.
But just, I persevered through the headache, and I got to the end.
It just shows how good the film is. You had a blasting headache, and yet you had a great time.
Yeah, literally.
Well, I agree with you in that this is the most hyped film in a very long time. I mean, I have not heard this much hype around a movie in ages. I can't remember the last film. And you're right, Luke, that it does, you know, when there is hype, it carries so much expectation. So when I watched it, I totally agree with the both of you. I think that it's a really good film. Is it great? I don't know. I think there are certainly moments that are great in it. Exactly like you said, Steph, I haven't been able to stop thinking about it. Images and moments and scenes and the music and all of that. So maybe it is great. I don't know. I do personally have my own, like, issues with these minor elements that, let's say if I was rating this out of 5, it would drop it down to like a 4.5. It's only minor things.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
fair. Like, you know, it's not a perfect film, but it just felt like such a roller coaster, and I had so much fun with it that
for
it's
sure
hard to not love it.
Yeah. Absolutely. No, 100%. I'm not gonna knock it at all. It's just that along with the hype, I've heard the word masterpiece used many times. This is a masterpiece. I think that word does not apply here.
I think that's true. I think this will go down as a classic blockbuster, because I think that's essentially what it is, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't think it's going to be sweeping up at the Oscars or anything like that.
No, not at all. No. It's just, it's an incredibly made film for what it is. And it has a lot to say. It's got a lot on its mind. And what you were saying earlier, Luke, you know, there's a build-up there's a whole build up to the vampire sequences. And when you really think about it, I've also been reading people have some issues with like the pacing of the movie where they say the pacing is really off. And I understand that because it takes so long. The film takes its time, but I agree with you. It's worth it to get there. We need those moments to build characters and relationships before, yeah, like you said, shit hits the fan.
Yeah, it just having that build up just makes the payoff so much more satisfying, I think.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
I think it's good as well that at the beginning of the film actually opens with Sammy riding in and walking into church. That scene kind of feeds you this... like a build, it gets you a nice setup, because if we didn't have that beginning scene where Sammy rides in and he's holding the broken, you know, guitar or banjo, it would have been slow for me, because if you started with, you know, oh, it's just the twins riding into town and they're here, that would have felt a lot slower than seeing that first scene and going, right, what's happened there then? And then we cut to yesterday. Yeah,
It's setting up the expectation for the shit to go down.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
What you're waiting for. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, only thinking about it now, I'm like, it's actually quite vital that that first scene is in there because he takes so long.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So
you're waiting to get to... I mean, we've seen a lot of films that they show a certain area of the movie. You don't know where it is. Is it the end? Is it the middle? So we're anticipating that scene, not knowing it's going to be right towards the end of the movie, but that's what the build is, and that's why we're getting excited, because you're like, when is this going to happen? When are we going to catch up?
Right, exactly. Yes. And we've already spoken about it, so we might as well dive head first. Let's talk about the music in this film.
Ugh.
Because yes, I think that the soundtrack and the score is probably going to go down as the best of the year.
it could very easily, yeah.
Very easily,
yeah.
But Steph, as the musician, talk us through your thoughts. What moved you about the music of this?
For me, I think the first time I watched it, I didn't really notice the melodic sort of undertone of the music. And that's when I say that, I mean specifically the music that don't have lyrics, the music that aren't
the score.
Yeah, the score of it. Ludwig's score, and not in terms of who's performing and the songs and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So for me, it was the songs that impacted me so much. But then looking back on it the second time I watched it, I start to then hear Ludwig's sort of undertone in those scenes where there's a bit of dialogue or something like that. It then creeps in and I'm like, it's so fitting when he does have those moments of let me just set the scene really quick, or, you know, we have a few seconds here, let me set the scene with this this synth or this violin or whatever it is he decides to use. But he does a great job at it. But for me, the main part that slaps me around the face is the music, the songs that are used, and how they're used, how they're implemented, how they're edited, how it's being used within the film. And I also love how it's like a mix of genre as well.
Yes.
I appreciate how they do that so smoothly, and it doesn't seem too jarring, because there's so many films that people try to use maybe like modern hip hop, but try and use it in a style where it's the movie's set in like Western times or something like that. And it doesn't, and it feels a bit too jarring when it is used, but the way it's used in this film is just so perfect for me.
Yeah, honestly. And you know, it's funny because there's two albums of this movie that's been released. There's the score by Göransson, and then there's the soundtrack. That Göransson obviously has a major part in, because the music they're doing, he does the background and all. And it's the soundtrack that got me even more invested into the score. I'm enjoying the score album even more now because of the soundtrack album. You know, you can hear all those motifs and themes constantly. And yeah, I agree that the blend of genres and also the appreciation of all types of music and all types of genres, mm-hmm. and how he lets it all, he lets the music do its thing and he gives it its own space to land. That is remarkable.
It's like a big melting pot of musical ideas, and it just works so well. And talking of like the blending of different genres and different music types, yes, you have like the more traditional blues blended with kind of more modern hip hop, that kind of thing. But what I really liked as well is how they kind of blended in a kind of like traditional horror vampire soundtrack with like the heavy organ.
Yes,
it's yeah. so badass.
Bam, bam, bam,
yeah.
bam.
Yeah. And some of the standout moments for me were very much based around that type of music in the film. But when it kind of reaches its the peak of its action, and you know when it starts to get a bit fucked up, and that this heavy organ comes in, like intertwined with this hip hop and this blues, it's just so awesome.
How do you do that? How can you make that seamless? How can you make that work? That is, it's a magic trick that he's
impressive,
pulled off.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Should be illegal to do that.
Honestly, let's talk about that musical montage sequence. Okay, because I don't even know if we should be, I don't really want to give it away here. You know, yeah. for the purposes yeah. of those who haven't seen the film, who may be listening to this, but
there's
thoughts on that, because it is bold as fuck.
Yeah, there's very much this standout scene in the middle, pretty much in the middle of the film, you know, and it's heavily based around the music, and it kind of takes you out of the film for a moment, and it almost plays like a music video sat within the film. Mm. It's super, super cool. I mean, I don't know how much it's what like its purpose is plot wise, other than it's just like it sounds really nice and it looks really nice. But I you know, I really enjoyed it. I think it was a good addition.
Yeah, because it's he breaks the fourth wall. I mean, like completely just yeah. I mean this warehouse or this barn that they're having what do they call it? It's like a juke joint.
Their dance, yeah. yeah.
And he literally burns it down for the purposes of yeah. this one musical montage. But the camera just swoops around the place as people are dancing, and bearing in mind, this takes place in the Jim Crow era. So we're going, this is a period piece. And all of a sudden, there's this blend of, you hear 90s hip hop beats come in. You see DJs wearing very traditionally modern clothes and yeah. using modern musical instruments. And everything sort of interweaving with each other. And
not just the musicians as well. Like you have the dancers as well, they're from yes. different periods. Yeah.
Yes. And he somehow, I mean, it's almost like it's the link to how all of music is connected. Mm. We are all connected no matter what time period you're in. And it's like he breezes through the evolution of music in the space of what, 3 minutes? I mean, it's stunning. And I don't know how you can even conceive of this as a scene, you know. And I would love to ask him, and I would love to ask Ludwig as well. I mean, surely that has to be scored, right? Like you have to direct to that, yeah. surely. Oh, you yeah. don't just, because that yeah. seems so specifically choreographed. I'm sure Göransson had to have already done, they must have worked on that whole, like, you know what I mean, in tandem. Yeah. I don't know.
I would yeah. almost guarantee that's how it went down, because it's too specific to have each moment and a new instrument's brought in, or a new decade or right. genre is brought into this piece, that we're panning to someone who is from that, you know, one of the spirits that are from that genre. or from that time, it's too specific to kind of go, ah, we'll just like, we'll nail it in post. You know what I mean? It's like, it's, they've definitely worked on something and this playing it in the scene, you know, at the back, behind the scenes, and then moving the camera to it.
Right. Oh, my word. I mean, listen, if anyone else attempted this, that could have been such an epic fail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He pulls it off. It's fascinating. It's bold. He makes it work. Yeah, it's a standout sequence.
Yeah.
And I feel like the film is it's a musical in many ways. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Just in how much it relies on its music, you know, I think it warrants being called a musical, even though there's no like explicit dance numbers or...
Yes. Yes.
Big numbers like that, but...
And then even throw in some of that and you're like, wow.
Yeah,
it's, and so many sequences that are just these actors performing music in so many different ways. And yeah, it's truly amazing. And also what I loved is there's this incredible connection to music made in this film as something that can be appreciated by good and evil, you know, like even the devil.
Yeah.
You know, let's go with calling the vampires the devil. Even the devil can play this lovely folk song like Will You Go Lassie Go.
So and nice.
It is my favorite song of the movie.
Will you go lassie go? And we'll all go together to Hawaii. All around the blooming heather, will you go, lassie, go?
I will build my love a bower by yon cool and crystal fountain, and on it I will pile.
And how he can, you know, they can appreciate a blues singer like Sammy Moore in the movie. Like you said, Steph, the movie itself takes a massive moment to appreciate all genres of music.
Yeah, and it's interesting you say about like the devil, because it's almost seen in the film like, it's not specifically Irish music, but the two main ones that are sung by them, by the vampires, by like the enemy, are both Irish songs.
Right.
But when you, during that scene, when the second song comes along and they're looking at all the vampires and they're in this whole dance thing, it's, you're not looking at them as in, oh my, look at these crazy, you're like, I want to join them. Let's see what
they're having a great fucking time.
Yeah. Yeah. Bite me on the neck. I want to go over here.
Oh my God. Hell yeah. If they jam that hard, why wouldn't you become a vampire? Yeah, I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this as well. I think there's also something to be said for the fact that Ludwig Göransson is a white Swedish composer. And he's the one chosen to do the music for this film. I don't know. It feels significant because...
Yeah, and it almost on the surface seems like an unusual choice. I mean, maybe not the best choice, but it's kind of hard to argue with that when he does such a good job of it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
I would say that it's a... I didn't think it was a really weird choice for Ryan Coogler to choose Ludwig Göransson, because... Besides, if you're not looking at Ludwig's work on movies and TV shows, if you look at his work on albums with Childish Gambino, he is...
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He has produced, I think, probably all, or if not most, of Childish Gambino's albums.
What?! No fucking
please
way.
Please tell me I'm not mistaken this for somebody else. Because
I know he definitely did some songs of his, but you're probably right about the whole albums.
Oh shit, that's
fascinating.
They've
worked together for years, and Ludwig Göransson I mean, Childish Gambino's music has been making waves for years. And the, you know, like the biggest one that comes to my head is Redbone by Childish Gambino, which has such a unique sound. And I remember clicking on the video on YouTube where I said, oh, look at the producers who made this song. And it's Ludwig Göransson. So for to pick him for this, I think is the absolute best choice you could go with right now.
Oh, at that's
this particular
amazing.
Moment in time.
That's amazing. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. I mean, it's amazing because I would have thought a movie that celebrates a black culture and music made by a black filmmaker, I would have thought the natural impulse would be to hand this to a black composer, maybe. But it also speaks to this embrace of anyone who makes music, which is what the film says. And yeah, you're right. I think it's whoever's best for the job. And Göransson clearly is. And he's also Coogler's composer. I mean, they have a collaboration going. Göransson has scored every film Coogler's made so far.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So why not keep that collaboration going, I guess?
And it's not failed him since. So, yeah, exactly. Why would you want to change it now?
And speaking to what you said earlier, Luke, you know, you said Göransson's one of the best composers out there right now. For me, this was like the announcement. Because I've heard of him, and every now and then I like a track or two. But for me, yes, I was like, ooh, now I need to listen to his entire body of work, you know?
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. I remember really loving his work on, like, The Mandalorian and that, and then his score for Tenet came out, and you guys know what I think about the film Tenet. I think it's a crock of shit, but
I'm with you there.
But I kind of hated the score as well. I just thought it was really ugly. So I was kind of disregarded him a bit, and I wasn't really that interested in what he was doing. But this film has definitely put him back on the map for me.
Fascinating. I'm 100% with you there. 100% with you.
The thing with just before we move on, the thing with Ludwig Göransson is I remember when I first started hearing his music, when he started kind of coming up in the scenes in Hollywood and stuff, and I mean even with Childish Gambino, every time I'd hear it for the first time, it'd be strange to me because I'm like, I've never heard this before. But it took me a while to realize that's a good thing. I'm not listening to recycled music. I'm listening to something new. And even I'll go as far to say, I mean, I didn't love Tenet either. Did not. I really didn't like it. But the music, when I spent time to listen to the music of Tenet, it may not be so pleasing to hear. There's not a lot of, you know, harmonizing melodies that you can latch onto. But if you listen to what he would do to get the sound, to make the sound of what Tenet is, the world of Tenet, because the entire film revolves around time and reverse everything like that, he would use specific instruments, reverse those sounds, record those sounds, reverse those sounds, using synths in those ways to build that atmosphere. And when you hear about things like that, you're like, this composer is doing everything in his power to honor the film, to make sure he's doing his job to the best of his ability. So, yeah, long story short, if you spend time to just kind of figure out what he's doing, not just like what you're hearing, but what he's doing, it makes you appreciate him so much more.
That's absolutely fair. Yeah, that's absolutely fair. And I haven't given him that time. But I really want to now because, yeah, you don't create music like this for this movie without being at the very top of your game.
Yep.
So the guy has clearly been doing his thing for a while now. And I guess I just missed the boat on that. But hey, we got there eventually.
We go there. As long as we get there at some point.
What did you guys think about the performances in this movie? Let's go with you, Luke.
I thought they were incredibly solid. I mean, there's stand out for me. I mean, I think Michael B. Jordan was good, and I think he did a good job of the dual roles.
Agreed. You
know, it didn't feel jarring to me. It felt natural, which is always good. But the standout for me was Delroy Lindo.
He played
Delta Slim.
Always. Always.
When is he not great?
He's just the amount of charisma, and he's so likable. Yeah, I really enjoyed watching him. But everyone's great. I think Jack O'Connell does a really good job playing the lead vampire, I guess. Again, he's super entertaining. But I think everyone does a really solid job.
Yeah, I agree. Steph?
I'd agree. I think I really enjoyed everyone's performance. I don't think there was a weak performance in the entire film. The second time I watched it, the first time I got quite confused. I wasn't noticing the subtle changes between Stack and Smoke, between Michael B. Jordan's characters. The second time is when I started to realize the differences between them, not in just the subtle nuances that he's putting in the acting in the performances, but even just their attire and what they wear and how they behave. That was when it kind of clicked to me, and I'm like, okay, now I know who Stack and who Smoke is, because the first time I just wasn't paying attention, I guess, to that kind of that far. But I think it's really well done. Even it's so subtle, and this is why I feel like I only caught it the second time, but there are definitely differences between the characters. He's not playing two of the same people. There are, you know, Stack is so much more laid back and goofy and making jokes, whereas Smoke is so much more, no, we have to do this, and he's,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So I really appreciated that watching it back for a second time. But with the ensemble in general, I think it's just really, really great casting. Everyone does such a great job. The main, because there are some people who are at the Duke joint who are just kind of there, don't really have a lot of lines, or have one line just for the sake of plot. But yeah, the mains I think are great.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think the performances are really good. Yeah, by everybody, by the whole ensemble. I think Michael B. Jordan does a really good job playing two different characters. You know, he does well with both of them. I was thinking to myself, how funny would it have been if you had De Niro in this movie playing twins, you know, instead of the Outer Knights? Very different movie. Yeah, I don't think it would quite have the same impact. But yeah, I mean, I'm going to have a quick hot take here. I don't think Michael B. Jordan is a great actor. I'll say that now. I think he's a good movie star. He knows how he looks on camera, and he knows how to technically perform on camera. And that makes him a great movie star. But personally, I don't know if I see much range in the guy. However, what he's asked to do, like, he stays within his range, and he's good at it, for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. I see where you're coming from. I feel like I just maybe haven't seen him in enough things. Like, I'm not that familiar with his catalogue of films. But I think he does a fine enough job in this. Like, I wasn't there thinking, oh, this guy's shit.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. He doesn't pull you out of it in any way. And yeah, like you said, Delroy Lindo, always great. I'll watch him in anything. I feel like the older he gets, the more compelling he is. Hayley Steinfeld is really good. Yeah, Jack O'Connell. I love Wunmi Mosaku. She's British. She's a Nigerian-born British actress. I've seen her in a few things. She was in that TV show Lovecraft Country. Also playing like a Southern woman, I think. And she's fantastic.
Brilliant. She's good, yeah.
Miles Caton. I mean, everyone's great. Everyone brings a unique character and adds something to the movie. I will say this, though. Can I now talk about minor little pet peeves?
Yeah.
For instance, this film spoon feeds us in so many ways.
That is true.
Just
before you go on, that's something I was going to mention about Masaku's character, is that I feel like she's there kind of a bit just to give the exposition that, like, these are vampires, guys. Come on, it's kind of a bit too
easy. Some garlic. Yeah. Let's make some steaks. it's so convenient that they have someone who has exactly. full vampire knowledge. But, you know, I feel like with Coogler, he almost expects that he treats the audience like they're dumb. And maybe he's right in a way. You know, he treats the audience like they have very short attention spans. So he's constantly having to either remind us of things or feed us information. And I feel like I don't necessarily need that. For instance, there's a scene early in the movie where Delroy Lindo tells a story about a friend of his who got lynched. And we hear the sound effects of this story as he tells it. We never cut to any flashbacks or cut to the scene. We hear sound effects. And I thought to myself, is that necessary? You've got Delroy Lindo telling a story. Just let him tell it.
Yeah, I feel like if they lingered on a bit of silence there, it probably would have had like more of an impact.
Absolutely. And there's a pet peeve of mine where I never like when they flash back to moments within the same movie. I can't stand that. And this movie does it multiple times. I feel like if you're going to do it in a way that illuminates something or provides you a different viewpoint or perspective, or, you know, just have it land and be impactful in some way. And this movie does it to just...
Remember this.
Yeah. It doesn't add much to the movie at all. Edit that out and nothing changes.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
Yeah. Those are my like initial little pet peeves. And there's a moment where the clan shows up in a final sequence. And I've got to be honest, I don't know how necessary that is.
To be honest, I mean, I was going to say, like, one issue I had with the film is everything from that moment onwards feels a bit unnecessary. Like, the film has a post-credit scene, and I was reading online and a lot of people really like it, but for me it felt a bit pointless.
Including
the clan scene.
Okay, yeah, I mean, we don't have to get into it too much, but yeah. That mid-credit scene, not a fan.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it, Steph?
The mid-credit scene, not the last one, right?
No, the mid-credits, yeah, when we're in the 90s now.
Oh, I thought it was... I liked it. I didn't think it was unnecessary at all. I think, if anything, the last one was unnecessary, although I still enjoyed it, but
wait,
the mid-one...
I think I missed one.
What last one?
There's a last one. There's mid, and then there's one right at the very end.
Oh, I didn't see that.
I didn't stick around, eh? And you call yourself film lovers?
Don't tell me there's going to be a Sinners 2.
No. It was. This is what I'm saying. It was like you don't have to see it. It doesn't add anything. It adds nothing to anything. Whereas the mid one does add something because it's adding more story. For me, anyway, I think it's cool because it was also a moment to throw in a established huge jazz player who plays Sammy as an older man. Is he established?
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. He's a real musician. I forget the name. Sorry, but he is like one of the people who, you know, one of the stepping stone people who established the sound of jazz and things like that.
He's called Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy. There you go. I'm sure you've heard of Buddy Guy, the name before. So that's one, like, you know, one, okay, it's Buddy Guy. But I also appreciated the fact that, A, we saw them run off, and they are, so we know they're not gone, being, you know, Stack and, I forget the Hayley Steinfeld's character's name. But, and the fact that it was, there was a truce made that we didn't get to see between Stack and Smoke to protect Sammy.
I get that, but I feel like they could have... I feel like the only reason that mid-credit scene was there is so that during the final like the finale of like conflict, there was that kind of Deus Ex Machina moment, like where Smoke comes and saves the day. You know, so because it's really hard because I don't want to spoil it, obviously.
Yeah, 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 it's tough.
Yeah. So yeah, I just, it didn't feel necessary, and it felt quite artificial, like overly constructed.
Mm.
Yeah, I kind of just felt like if you can make truces with these vampires, that's a bit easy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, oh, cool, you can just make a truce with them and they'll just carry on living and enjoying music from all decades. You know, it's a weird one. I just kind of feel like, and it goes to a lot of things I feel about how no one knows how to end movies anymore. No one knows how to just end things. I mean, they just keep going. There's a moment towards the end of this film, I was like, oh, there's your perfect ending. There's your perfect shot right there. Mm. It's a car driving down this long path with the fields on either side. It's like, there it is. And no, we keep going. Now we've got post-credit sequences. And it's like, I know you're a Marvel director, dude, but is that necessary?
I was going to say, it does seem very Marvel-y, doesn't it?
Yeah. And as a viewer, it makes you, at least for me, it made me quite restless. I was like ready to go because the film's done. It's done. There's no more drama. There's no more.
It's not done until the lights are up in the screen, Luke. Come on.
Agreed. And the crazy thing is, did you see the other one where he walks into the bar and Tony Stark is sitting there and he turns to Stack and goes, I think I can work with you. I mean, why not? Right? Why not? Yeah, I mean, okay, I could just keep going on this movie, but I would love to get to pairings. Do you have any final thoughts on this film?
It's just so much fun. So much fun.
Mm.
Definitely go check this out if you haven't seen it already.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I've got to say, this is a massive step up for me for my opinion on Ryan Coogler as a filmmaker as well.
Yeah.
It's so impressive. I think the fact that this is a big budget genre movie, it's a blockbuster, but it's also a black movie made predominantly by black filmmakers, but also being incredibly diverse. The fact that it's a massive, massive success is a reason to celebrate this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, I feel like it gives us hope for movies at a time when the movie industry is at its lowest ebb, you know? And what's fascinating too is this is a filmmaker. He's already been in the Marvel machine. He made two movies, you know, he'll probably make more. And he was already a good filmmaker before Marvel, but he hasn't been chewed up and spit out. And I think that's so great. You know, Black Panther was so wildly successful that there was a danger he could get put into a box.
Yeah.
And I think of the Russo brothers, for instance, who are so associated with Captain America and Avengers, and all of their post-Endgame output has been mediocre, average at best, you know. But Coogler's proven with this film and the films he made before Marvel came calling that he's so much more.
Yeah. You can really see the influence from his time on those Marvel films, though, in Sinners. Mm. Just kind of based on the fact of, I know we said initially that like the pacing was maybe a bit unusual, but I think this is a very fast-paced film, and like it never really takes a moment to let things linger or let things rest. It doesn't take its time. It's very like, it does maybe at times feel a bit mechanical, but almost, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but it's something that I feel mirrors the structure of Marvel films quite a lot.
That's really interesting. I never thought of that. That's really interesting because it is relentless in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also think that plays into the whole spoon feeding thing because that's Marvel do that every damn movie.
That's it. Yes. Yes.
Here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to know. Here's what you need to know.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that for sure. Yeah.
But it's good because he's like taken those elements of the Marvel films, which I know a lot of people hate and a lot of people shit on, but he's made it something unique and really entertaining and quite mature, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. There's moments for sure. Yeah, it's just such a wildly fucking entertaining movie. Let's do pairings. And what I'd like to do for this one is on 3, 2, 1, let's all say the pairing that we've thought of, okay?
We're all saying the same one.
Are you expecting us to say the same one? Because I had a really hard time thinking of this and I've gone for something a bit niche, I think.
I feel like Chris and I have got the same one.
Let's do 3, 2, 1 and then let's just see what happens.
Okay. If we can hear anything.
All right. So 3, 2, 1.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, right.
What did you say, Luke?
Dog soldiers.
Oh, okay. All right. So then talk to us about that, because I've seen it ages ago.
Okay. So Dog Soldiers is a bit of a cult classic. And I chose this as a lot of my pairings I kind of choose on the basis that they're quite similar in aspects to the film we're talking about. Whereas for this one, I've kind of just gone from the angle that I would just love to see these movies back to back. And I think they pair so well. Because obviously you have like vampires and werewolves all kind of sit within the same genre. And I think these two would sit really well next to each other because they're kind of both quite unique, high octane approaches to these different like mythical creatures. So Dog Soldiers, it's from like 2001 or 2002, I think. And it's about these, like, I don't know if that's like special forces, but these like British army guys who are up in the Scottish Highlands doing some training. And they just kind of one by one start getting picked off by these werewolves. And it's a bit of it's a crazy movie. And the design of the werewolves is really unique and really, really cool. It's completely different to like any other werewolves I've seen before. And it's just a hell of a lot of fun. And just watching Sinners and its approach to vampires reminded me of Dog Soldiers and its approach to werewolves. So I thought they'd be cool together.
That's so cool. I saw this film so long ago and I can't remember anything about it except for one actor who's in it. He's always had this distinctive face. I really like him. I have since remember hearing like people raving Dog Soldiers.
It's so good. It's
I need to go back.
It's a massive cult classic, and you're right. There's like a quite loyal fan base towards it now.
Sick.
But it's so much fun.
Oh, I love that. All right, I'm going to revisit that. Cool. Well then, all right, so Steph, it's the obvious pairing, yeah. So why did you go for From Dusk Till Dawn?
It was just... it just gave me the same vibes. I've seen a fair share of vampire movies, and this one was just like... I thought this during the first watch. I was like, this is reminding me of From Dusk Till Dawn when they get to the bar out in the middle of nowhere and, you know, everything, it takes a while and it also kind of reminds me of the way it's like, because From Dusk Till Dawn, it was like, if you didn't look into it or watch the trailer or whatever, you're watching this film and it's actually a very different film the first half an hour maybe. And then you get towards like the middle and you're like, oh, this is not the film I was expecting I was going to watch.
It just changes genres on you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And this was... it just especially once everyone's at the Duke joint, it just reminded me of them being at the bar from Dusk Till Dawn and everything just going completely crazy. Obviously, this is... I think From Dusk Till Dawn, they just kind of... they went even more wild with it inside, but... yeah, it just gave me those vibes. And then I think I later read that it was inspired. So when Ryan Coogler was thinking of the idea, it was inspired by From Dusk Till Dawn. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. But I think I did read that.
Well,
that makes so much sense.
Yeah, in my opinion, it would be impossible not to. Mm-hmm. I think these films are in conversation with each other. And I know for a fact there would be no Sinners without From Dusk Till Dawn.
Right. Yeah.
Yes, he's absolutely drawing on that, and but doing his own thing with it.
Yeah.
I've since Sinners has come out, I've since been reading a lot about how people have gone back to From Dusk Till Dawn and are like, wow, that's so shit. And Ryan Coogler has basically done, he's done the best version of it. I fucking love From Dusk Till Dawn, maybe because it is shit. I don't know.
But you have to sit through Tarantino's acting for quite a while.
But you know what? He is like, he's a great psychopath.
Yeah,
he really is. He makes a great psychopath. I love From Dusk Till Dawn. I always have. But yeah, there are certainly elements of Sinners that are just... I mean, it's chalk and cheese. You can't even compare the two. You really can't. But yeah, I think they would make fascinating double features.
Yeah.
But one more film did come to mind for me, because I honestly thought we'd all choose From Dusk Till Dawn. But I want to throw another one in there. And I thought the film Green Room.
Mm.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, Luke!
Oh, no.
Oh, dude.
Is this the Fincher film?
No. This was a Jeremy Saulnier film. Okay. Dude, you need to... I won't say too much, but the reason I picked it is because you have a band performing in this one location, and... shit gets really hairy in this one location and they find themselves trapped there. And this is Anton Yelchin in a lead role back when he was still, you know, with us. It's this band, this Nazi metal band that go to this neo-Nazi skinhead bar in the woods, and it gets so hairy. And their leader, the guy who like controls all the people in this bar, is Patrick Stewart.
Oh, damn.
Of all and people. When he shows, I mean, you rarely see him in a villain role, but it is, it's not even worth saying anything. You just need to set yourself down, watch this movie.
That sounds cool.
If you think Sinners is entertaining, watch Green Room.
Okay.
Oh, it's, yeah, honestly, I mean, wow, what a movie night this would be. Jesus, this might be my favorite pairings that we've ever done.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
All right, well, awesome. Cool, I guess we'll leave it there. thank you for listening, everybody. A special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by... Stefan Krieger.
Me. That's right. I can actually say it myself for once. The music is by me.
You can find more of his music on?
You can find it on YouTube. Oh, God. You probably know more than I do, Chris. If you go to my YouTube.
Stefan-Krieger.com.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about my website.
Oh, my God. I literally set you up there.
If you go to Stefan-Krieger.com, that is my website. I've got all my music on there, some sound design stuff, and some of my, you know, I do soundtracks, but I also do pop and my own music that I write and produce myself. So,
and it's bloody good.
Thank you.
It's bloody good, if I may say so. Yeah, thank you for joining us, sir. And we hope to have you on another one again soon.
Thank you for having me. I apologize for the internet issues.
It's all good, man. It's all good. And of course, our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson as well. Head to the cinema and watch Sinners if you still can. It's bloody brilliant. And you know what? If you do that, I'll head to the cinema and I'll meet you there. For a second, I genuinely forgot what to say. I was going to like close it out and I was like, I stalled. Head to the cinema, head to the Phoenix Cinema, and I'll meet you there.